무감 가라디 바찰람 방금 랑카의 대기림 약기 밤담 한번 내쉬 그럼 니는 차비남 어머께나 티메란다시야 게란자나 샤라카야 책쉬미니 참야이나 타스마이 시리그라베나맘. So we are the first and second cantos of the Lotus Feet of the Lord. We're at the Lotus Feet of Krishna. And that's a good place to start. The first canto, the emphasis is to the two Bhagavatas, the book Bhagavat. You are familiar with the word Bhagavat? It means a devotee, or either a book or a devotee. Personification of Srimad Bhagavatam. So in the first canto we find the history of Srimad Bhagavatam and also the devotee Bhagavats. And we have heard about Vyasadev and Narada. Vyasadev is the author. Narada is his guru, who chastised him because he wasn't thinking of Krishna enough. He wrote Vedanta Sutra and all the Vedas, but it just wasn't enough to satisfy him. So, therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam. And then we hear about Shukadev and Parikshit. And Parikshit is the emperor of the world after Yudhisthira. And now we are hearing his history, starting from this eighth chapter of the first canto. And his history begins in the womb. Most people's history begins at birth. But Parikshit Maharaj's history begins from the womb, where Krishna appeared to him to protect him from the Brahmastra. So now what's happening after Krishna comes to save Uttara, he's ready to leave the Pandavas and go to Dwarka. So the first thing before in the Vedic culture, you have to take permission from your superiors. So Kunti is the superior of Krishna. She's his aunt. So he's come to take the dust of her lotus feet and to ask permission, although he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's taking the dust of her feet and asking permission to go to Dwarka. But Kunti is not giving permission to go. Instead, she is begging him, please don't go, please stay with us. And she is, this verse 25 that you did recite today is that she's saying that I would rather have a constant series of dangers and have you with us than have you leave us. Now we have our opulence, and you're leaving us. So what's the use of all the opulence? And she said, what's the use of the kingdom? What's the use of our bodies if you're not here? Because you are the life of our body, and you are the life of our kingdom. And so these are the essential lessons of her prayers. Danger brings us closer to Krishna if we simply depend upon him. So there are many lessons, and that was basically verse 25. Where Srila Prabhupada also in the purport said a very nice thing. He said that this world is full of calamities, so the duty of a sane person is to be undisturbed by worldly calamities, which are sure to happen. So when you become a devotee, it's not that the hurricane stops. It's a hurricane country. So the hurricane is going to come, but you're going to remain peaceful. And eventually you may come to the point of Kunti, where you'll say, give me more hurricanes. Because it's easier to remember you in the middle of the hurricane, because then I'm forced. And so that was Kunti's position. And she also said how the material assets can be obstacles to our depending on Krishna. Janma, Aishraya, Shuta, and Shri. That means birth and wealth. Janma, Aishraya, Shuta, great learning. Shuta, and beauty. Shri. So you all are going to become learned scholars. You're going to the university. But don't let it make you proud of your learning and become an obstacle to your Krishna consciousness. Always remember that the highest knowledge is Srimad Bhagavatam. And if you know Bhagavatam, you know everything. That is what Srila Prabhupada says. So after 7 months, you will know everything. And no need for further study. But that's okay if you want to go to the university, because it's what you're supposed to be doing. So here we have these obstacles. Prabhupada, they were not obstacles for him. His life was an example of, you could say, calamities in one sense, that everything was taken away from him. And then he completely. Of course, he was already a pure devotee and surrendered, but he said his idea was to become rich and then finance his preaching by becoming, well, with all the money he got from his business. Krishna had a different plan, took all the money away, and Prabhupada surrendered, and just like Queen Kunti. And although he, and then afterwards, Krishna gave him everything. He gave him the whole world. And everyone in the world became his family. He said, I had 5 sons and now I have 500. And so when Prabhupada was asked, where do you live? He says, I live in a 747 jet. Because he did not, he said, I am like Narada Muni, although I travel, I have houses, beautiful palaces all over the world. I can't stay anywhere because I'm cursed. And you'll hear about that in Canto 6 or 5, somewhere around there, Canto 6. Okay, so then in the verses 28 to 31 of her prayers, she describes his contradictory behavior, how he's feared by everyone, but he's afraid of Mother Yashoda's stick. So this is the difference. Kunti points out the difference between herself and the Brijbasis. The Brijbasis are in a much higher position because they only love Krishna. Even sometimes they're face to face with knowledge of his great opulence, but it doesn't disturb their great love for Krishna. Yashoda saw the whole universe in Krishna's mouth. Yes, because she asked him, did you, his friend said, Krishna is eating dirt. And so she said, okay, open your mouth and let me see. And so he opened his mouth, and what did she see? She saw the whole universe, universal form. And she was bewildered. She thought, well, am I dreaming or am I crazy? But then after a while, she thought, okay, anyway, then she said some prayers to protect Krishna from this seeming unnatural behavior, and told Krishna, just don't do it again, okay? Because her natural love is much greater than the knowledge. But for Kunti, her knowledge was greater. She always knew that Krishna is Supreme Personality of Godhead. Beginning of her prayers, Namashe Purusham Tvadyam. She says, I offer obeisances to you. Now, Yashoda would never offer obeisances to Krishna. She never thought he could do anything. And whenever he was saved, she thought, okay, this is Narayan. You know, and then she's prayed to Narayan. And Krishna is somebody else, is her little boy. So this was one point that Kunti brought out. And then in verses 32 to 37 of the 8th chapter, she explained why Krishna appears. To relieve the devotees from, basically, to relieve the devotees of distress. And the biggest distress of the devotees is not something in this material world, as Kunti showed. She said, bring me the calamities. I don't care about them. The biggest distress is separation from Krishna. And so, therefore, he comes to please his devotees, to glorify them, to glorify Yadu. He appeared in Yadu dynasty. To glorify Vasudeva and Devaki, he appeared in Devaki's womb, and he appeared as their son. And he put them in a higher position than himself. He likes to glorify his devotees. He came to answer the prayers of Vasudeva and Devaki and Brahma, who was worried, concerned. Brahma is the head of the management of this material world. So when all the demons came on this earth 5,000 years ago, he could not cope with it. And so he had to go to the higher authority, to the ocean of milk, and meditate on Krishna and beg him, please come and do something. Please help us. And he said, yes, I will come. So he came for the prayers of Brahma to relieve the burden of the earth. And he also came to teach devotional service. So there is one verse, that is verse, I think, 36. Yes. In the 8th chapter. So I'm going to sing that one because I like that one. Shinvanti kayanti ginanta bhikshnasha smaranti nandanti tavehitam janaha ta eva pashyanta chirena tavakam pava pravaho paramam param bhujam. O Krishna, those who continuously hear, chant, and repeat your transcendental activities or take pleasure in others doing so certainly see your lotus feet, which alone can stop the repetition of birth and death. So chanting, hearing, and accepting the message of Krishna, and being happy when you see others chant. So this is one of the beautiful verses of Queen Kunti. If you do this, then very quickly you will see the lotus feet of Krishna. Just like in this world, if you flow with it, you're going to flow into the moats and flow into death and then again birth. But if you chant in here, it's a different current. It's a different stream that you will be flowing with. And that is the transcendental current of hearing and chanting. And if you flow with that current, it's going to take you to the lotus feet of Krishna. And you will see them. And Prabhupada said, very soon, not after millions of years, very soon you'll see the lotus feet of Krishna. So then, verses 38 to 43, Kunti expresses her heartfelt request that please don't leave us. If you leave us, then we will just be like dead bodies. And that's a fact. When the soul and super soul leave the body is dead. But for her, Krishna was the life of the body. For us, of course, the life of our body is the soul. And when the soul leaves the body, then the body's finished. So Kunti said that you are the life of our body. If you leave, then our body will be finished. And then she says, if you leave, our kingdom will be finished. You are the life of our kingdom. And now you're marking our kingdom with the beautiful prints of your lotus feet. So if you leave, if we don't see your glance, if we can't see your beautiful face, then what is the use of living? So this is the conclusion of her prayers, where she is glorifying Krishna, expressing her gratitude for him saving them, and then explaining a little bit about the philosophy, how this contradictory behavior of Krishna, and then finally begging him not to leave. And then her last prayer is for detachment from everything, so I can completely focus my mind on you. And so every time in this world, we have our attachments. Everybody has their attachments. And some of them may be on the physical level, our possessions, our relationships, and some may be on the subtle level, our conceptions of this world and how we should enjoy in this world and how we can control this world for our satisfaction. So she's praying for detachment, and then with detachment comes attachment to Krishna. And she's praying, let my attachment flow to you just like the Ganga flows to the sea. So this is the conclusion of her prayers. And then in the next verses of chapter 8, the concluding verses 44 to 50, Krishna smiles and he accepts her prayers, but he keeps on going out to Dwarka. So she didn't succeed in keeping him back and holding him back. And the devotees, they were always trying to think of ways to get Krishna to come to their place. In Hastinapur, before, they were thinking, you know, how can we get Krishna here? Okay, we'll have a Rajasuya sacrifice, and he has to come. So now everything was over. You know, they got the kingdom, and they were in a very materially opulent position. Everything was achieved, materially speaking. And this is sampat in Sanskrit. This is the opulence. But instead of sampat, she was saying, no, vipat is better. Vipat means losing everything and being in distress. So Vishwanath Chakravarti explains her vipat, her distress was her sampat, that was her opulence. And her opulence, her sampat, that was her vipat, that was her distress. So it was the opposite of what people usually think of success in this world. And Kunti is an incarnation of the success potency of the Lord. So even Kunti, although she was an incarnation of the success potency, how she had to suffer. I mean, so much in the material world that her husband died, her kingdom was taken away, and her children were attempted to be killed so many ways. But her real success was not material. Although she did get material success in the end, her real success was her Krishna consciousness, her attachment to Krishna. And that's what the meaning of success potency, that she was very attached to Krishna. And that is the success of our life, and we can learn from Queen Kunti how to actually be successful in our Krishna consciousness by adopting her mood, her prayerful mood. She is teaching us how to pray, how to pray to Krishna. So then what happened after Krishna's, he's on his way out to Dwarka, then Yudhisthira comes. And Yudhisthira is begging him with great love, with prema. Please stay for a while. Don't go yet. Just don't go just yet. So, because Yudhisthira was very upset, he was very distressed about all the millions of people who were killed in the battlefield of Kurukshetra. And he could not do his service of ruling the world. It's not that he wanted to, that big, big position of the whole, being emperor of the whole world. He didn't really want it, but it was his service for Krishna. Krishna wanted him to do it. And he had an obstacle now to his service that he felt guilty that, you know, I am responsible for the deaths of so many people. I'm responsible for so many women to become widows and children to become fatherless. So he felt very, no one could console him. Vyasadeva tried, all the sages tried to console Yudhisthira. Even Krishna tried. But no, Yudhisthira could not be consoled. So therefore Krishna delayed his trip because of Yudhisthira. Yudhisthira had so much love, so much prema, that he had to stay. Prabhupada in a lecture said, he could have refused, no, I cannot stay anymore. But Premna, he had so much love for Krishna, Krishna could not refuse him. And so Krishna, no one can stop Krishna if Krishna wants to do something, he's God. But with love, everything is possible, with prema. And so Yudhisthira had that love, and he detained Krishna, who was determined to go back to Dwarka. So he detained him again for a few months. And there are three reasons. Now, why couldn't Yudhisthira be pacified by Krishna and Vyasadeva and all of these people? How is it possible? Krishna is the Supreme Lord. He spoke Gita. He convinced Arjuna to fight. Why couldn't he convince Yudhisthira to take up the kingdom and do his service? And so three reasons why. He wanted Bhishma to instruct Yudhisthira. There are three reasons why Krishna wanted Bhishma to instruct Yudhisthira. And that is, number one, so Bhishma could see Krishna at the time of death. That was the first reason. That he knew Bhishma is his great devotee, and he had this desire to see him at the time of death. And secondly, so Bhishma could pass away peacefully, seeing Yudhisthira installed as emperor. So this is very significant because Bhishma was on the other side. He was fighting against Yudhisthira. So why would he want Yudhisthira to be the king? Because I got some here. Because Bhishma was the grandfather of the Pandavas as well as the Kauravas. And actually, the Pandavas were the rightful heirs to the kingdom. But Bhishma was on the wrong side. He was on the wrong side of the battle. So Krishna wanted to show in that battle that even if you're the greatest warrior, he was the most powerful on both sides. Still, you can't win if you're on the wrong side. If you're on the side of vice, then you cannot win. You have to be on the side of virtue to win. So second, and he also wanted to see Yudhisthira on the throne, although he was fighting on the opposite side. So it's very hard to understand all these different complicated rules of dharma, religion. So then thirdly, Krishna wanted Bhishma to instruct Yudhisthira so Bhishma could be glorified as being able to do something that even Krishna could not do. Console and instruct Yudhisthira. And so Krishna always wants his devotees to be glorified more than him, just like Arjuna is glorified as the hero of the battle of Kurukshetra. Krishna was just the driver. And Hanuman was glorified also in the battle of Lord Ram. He could jump over to Lanka. Ram had to build a bridge to go over. So Krishna and Prabhupada also is glorified as doing something even Lord Chaitanya couldn't do that. He spread it all over the world. Lord Chaitanya spread in India and Prabhupada all over the world. So this is an attribute of Krishna, that he likes his devotees to be glorified more than himself. So therefore, they decided, okay, let's go to Bhishma. He can certainly convince Yudhisthira to take up the kingdom, take up the kingship of the world. So his Bhishma's name is Devavrata. In the first verse, they call him Devavrat. Vrata means a vow. So he took a very difficult vow of being brahmachari his whole life. Naishtik brahmachari. So this is impossible, especially if you're a king. You're not meant to be brahmachari. You're meant to have children and perpetuate the dynasty. But Bhishmadev took the vow just so his father could have another wife. But anyway, he took the vow, and part of that vow was that he could die at a time when he wanted to die. He could control his time of death. So he should have died long ago. Anyone who had arrows all over their bodies would have died. But he was waiting. He was waiting until Krishna came in front of him, the time of death. He was just waiting. Waiting for that moment. So Lord Krishna came. Not only Lord Krishna came, the Pandavas came, all the sages came, Vyasadeva, Narada, and so many sages. And Bhishma was receiving everyone, although he was lying down on the bed of arrows. He couldn't move, so physically he couldn't receive them properly. But he spoke sweet words, and according to each one's position, he was greeting them very nicely, even though he was in that condition. And that also, of course, reminds us of Śrīla Prabhupāda, that he was in that condition, and he was receiving everyone very nicely. And he was asking about their health, although he was in the worst position of health. And he was, oh, are you okay? And he was concerned. Remembering that Girashtami had some fever, and he said, are you okay now? You know, and, you know, who's going to think like that when you're suffering so much pain? So Bhishma also, he had this presence of mind that he could tolerate. I was just thinking the other day, you know, what must those arrows be like in, you know, after a long, long, after weeks in your body, you know, and you're just lying there, and it must have been pretty, you know, after, I don't know, it must have taken, it was more than a month that he was on in those arrows. It was more than a month. It was a long time. He had to wait for the sun to go to the north. So whenever that is, it could be, and it's, I don't know. Anyway, it was around after Kartik. So he was in a very amazing suffering condition. And in this condition, they are asking him for instructions, how to rule the world. And so when Bhishma first saw the Pandavas, he was lamenting for them. He said, oh, you're so pious, and your friend is Krishna, and you had to suffer so many things. I just can't understand this. So then, in the purport of verse 12, Prabhupada says that as long as a person is fully in cooperation with the wishes of the Lord, guided by the bona fide Brahmanas and Vaishnavas, and strictly following religious principles, one has no cause for despondency, however trying the circumstances of life. So cooperate with the wishes of Krishna. Follow his plan and listen to the... Also take guidance from the Brahmanas and Vaishnavas and strictly follow religious principles. And then you won't have any problems in life. Your problems will become insignificant, even if you have problems. Of course, everybody has problems. So Bhishma was saying, I cannot understand the plan of the Lord. It must be time. It's just time that does it. So we cannot escape the clutches of time. Nobody can escape except for a devotee. He escapes. And which kind of devotee escapes time? One who is always chanting and hearing the glories of the Lord. The sun rises and sets, and it decreases duration of life for everyone, but a devotee who is always chanting and hearing. So this is what we are doing here. So we are going to be protected, not only from time, but from Yamraj. Because Yamaraj is invited to Bhagavatam class by the sages. So therefore, one of you may be Yamaraj over here. We don't know. Oh, you know which one. So we don't have to worry about death while we're listening here to Bhagavatam. So Bhishma, he says, I can't understand the plan of the Lord. So Prabhupada explains in one purport, well, why devotees suffer. This is in the purport of 17. We're almost there to 30. We're going to get there. So verse 17 of this chapter 9, he gives an example why devotees suffer. Prabhupada says, a housewife teaches the daughter-in-law by teaching the daughter. So Krishna is compared to the housewife, and he's teaching the non-devotees of this world by teaching the devotees. So he spoke Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna to teach everyone in the world how to serve him. So then Prabhupada says a very interesting conclusion. Therefore, a devotee's duty is to ungrudgingly accept tribulations from the Lord as a benediction. So if something happens to you, it's for the better of the whole world. Krishna may be using your life as an example to give inspiration to others. So therefore, if we respond, as Prabhupada says, according to the wishes of the Lord and guided by the devotees of the Lord and following the principles, then we can become an example, and that's how you can change the world. You become an example, so then others can follow. So now in the last section of verses 18 to 30 of chapter 9, Bhishma glorifies Krishna as Supreme Personality of Godhead, appearing as one of us. And he says, only the Mahajans, the great souls, can understand this. And in verse 20, he instructs Yudhisthira that, you know, you're thinking Krishna is your cousin, your friend, your well-wisher, your messenger, but actually, he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You don't know. You don't know who is this Krishna. He's telling Yudhisthira, because Yudhisthira forgot. Otherwise, maybe he would have listened to Krishna and taken up the reins of the kingdom. So then, Bhishma glorifies Krishna as Arjuna's chariot driver. And Prabhupada says he's our chariot driver too, because we are just, Krishna is in the heart, and we are sitting there, and in the body, he's driving the body. He's, as Gita says, Ishara Sarabhutanam, that I am driving everyone's body, Ishara in the heart. So Prabhupada explains that devotional service reveals how he's the chariot driver. So Arjuna revealed to everyone how Krishna is the chariot driver, Prabhupada said. That's a very beautiful thing I took from the purport. In verse 21, oh, that was verse 21. Verse 23. Now, I would like to read this verse, because in this verse, it's connected to the 30th verse, to 23. Bhishma is teaching us how to meditate on Krishna at the time of death, how to prepare also. Personality of Godhead, who appears in the mind of the devotee by attentive devotion and meditation and by chanting of the holy name, releases the devotee from the bondage of fruitive activities at the time of his quitting the material body. Because verse 30 is all about leaving the body, which Bhishma is about to do. And this verse is very significant because it tells how, or it actually what happens at the time of death for a devotee. He will appear in the mind of the devotee by attentive devotion and meditation by chanting the holy name. So our whole lives, we have to practice attentive devotion, means with our full consciousness, meditation on Krishna, trying to remember him in our daily lives, and chanting the holy name. So this is the process. And if we follow this process, he will appear in our mind at the time of death. And it says, releases the devotee from the bondage of fruitive activities at the time of his quitting the material body. So that was a very significant verse that I wanted to also say because of its connection with our last verse today, verse 30. And verse 24 is also very significant, and this is his meditation, a meditation of Bhishma at the time of death. May my Lord, who is four-handed, whose beautifully decorated lotus face, with eyes as red as the rising sun, is smiling, kindly await me at that moment when I quit this material body. So that is his. He's expressing his desire that please don't go away. Please stay here so I can see you at the time of death. And Krishna has come there for that purpose, actually, just so Bhishma can see him at the time of death. And then, okay, you can go to verse 30, back to verse 30. So verses 25 through 29, he's his instructions to Yudhisthira about religious principles, essential principles of various religious duties. Varnashram and Bhagavad Dharma, both are described by Bhishma, because he is a great devotee and a Mahajan. So verse 30, I guess I could read it up there. Do they chant responsibly, or? Yeah, we can chant, there's no problem. We finish at 8:30, is it? 8:35, okay. And there's question answers. 8:35. Okay. Okay, so we could have maybe three people chant responsibly like that. So I'll sing it. Tadapa sangrita, Tadapa sangrita gira sahasranir.
Tadapa sangrita gira sahasranir.
Vimukta sangam mana ari pushe.
Vimukta sangam mana ari pushe.
Krishna la sapita pate chaturpuje.
Krishna la sapita pate chaturpuje.
Purasti te milita drik vyadharayat.
Purasti te milita drik
vyadharayat. Okay, chant. Somebody?
Nitya gira sahasranir.
Kata pasahitya gira sahasranir. Vimukta sangamana adi purushe. Krishna sapita purushe. So I'll just go to the translation because of time. Thereupon, that man who spoke on different subjects with thousands of meanings, who fought in thousands of battlefields and protected thousands of men, stopped speaking, and being completely freed from all bondage, withdrew his mind from everything else and fixed his wide-open eyes upon the original personality of Godhead, Shri Krishna, who stood before him, four-handed, dressed in yellow garments that glittered and shined. Oh, okay, go ahead.
Purport. In the momentous hour of leaving his material body, Bhishma Dev set the glorious example concerning the important function of the human form of life. The subject matter which attracts a dying man becomes the beginning of his next life. Therefore, if one is absorbed in thoughts of the Supreme Lord Shri Krishna, he is sure to go back to Godhead without any doubt. This is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. Verse 5. And whoever at the time of death quits his body remembering me alone at once attains my nature. Of this there is no doubt. Verse 6. Whatever state of being one remembers when he quits his body, that state he will attain without fail.
Therefore, Arjuna, you should always think of me in the form of Krishna and at the same time carry out your prescribed duty of fighting. With your activities dedicated to me and your mind and intelligence fixed on me, you will attain me without doubt. He who meditates on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his mind constantly engaged in remembering me, undeviated from the path he, O Parth, Arjun, is sure to reach me. One should meditate upon the Supreme Person as the one who knows everything, as he who is the oldest, who is the controller, who is smaller than the smallest, who is maintainer of everything, who is beyond all material conception, who is inconceivable and who is always a person. He is luminous like the sun and being transcendental is beyond this material nature.
One who at the time of death fixes his life. One who at a time of death fixes his life air between the eyebrows and in full devotion engages himself in remembering the Supreme Lord will certainly attain to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Persons learned in the Vedas who utter Omkara and who are great sages in the renounced order enter into Brahman, desiring such perfection. One practices celibacy. I shall now explain to you this process by which one may attain salvation. The yogic situation is that the detachment from all sensual engagements, closing all the doors of the senses and fixing the mind on the heart and the life air at the top of the head, one establishes himself in yoga.
After being situated in this yoga practice and vibrating the sacred syllable Om, the supreme combination of letters, if one thinks of the supreme personality of Godhead and quits his body, he will certainly reach the spiritual planets. For one who remembers me without deviation, I am easy to obtain, O son of Pratha, because of his constant engagement in devotional service. After attaining me, the great souls who are yogis in devotion never return to this temporary world, which is full of miseries, because they have attained the highest perfection.
Sri Bhishma Deva attained the perfection of quitting his body at will and was fortunate enough to have Lord Krishna, the object of his attention, personally present at the time of his death. He therefore fixed his open eyes upon him. He wanted to see Sri Krishna for a long time out of his spontaneous love for him. Because he was a pure devotee, he had very little to do with the detailed performance of yogic principles. Simple bhakti yoga is enough to bring about perfection. Therefore, the ardent desire of Bhishma Dev was to see the person of Lord Krishna, the most lovable object, and by the grace of the Lord, Sri Bhishma Deva had this opportunity at the last stage of his breathing.
Okay, thank you very much. In my book, there is one sentence that is in italics. I don't know if it is up there. It's the first paragraph of the purport. You can scroll down a little. No, it's not in, it's right in that first paragraph, right? But it's not in italics. Go all the way back to the top. Now go to the first paragraph of the purport. Yes. So it's the second sentence. The subject matter, which attracts a dying man, becomes the beginning of his next life. So, what does that mean? That means whatever you have become at this point, right now, will determine what body you get in your next life. Your consciousness, what is in your mind, what is the most attractive or fearful thing in your mind right now at this point, will determine what sort of body you get in your next life. So death can happen at any moment. So therefore, it's good to be introspective and see what is in your mind, what is the most pressing, what is the most important thing for you right now. Because if you should die right now, what kind of body will you get? Every single desire you have will create a new body to fulfill those desires. Every single desire, anything you have. So if you have some desires to enjoy, then you will get another body to enjoy in this world. If all your desires are finished, then you will get a spiritual body. Or if you're working on it, then you may get, with the mercy of Krishna, a spiritual body too. If you're working on your spiritual side, that is very helpful. Because Krishna in Gita, he says, I will protect what you have and carry what you lack. So at the time of death, I'm sure a lot of us are going to be lacking a few things. So therefore, that's why it is important to always concentrate on Krishna, and to accept a spiritual master, because your spiritual master will also make up for what you lack. That is his duty. So we have this example of Bhishma, how he prepared for death. What is happening at this point? In Nectar of Devotion, I'd like to read a couple of excerpts of what was happening at this time. Bhishma Dev was not just praying, of course, we have the essence in Srimad Bhagavatam. But Nectar Devotion tells us that he was speaking to Kripacharya, who was another great general on his level. And he was saying, just see the wonderful causeless mercy of Lord Krishna. I'm most unfortunate. I have no qualification. I was opposing Krishna's most intimate friend, Arjuna. I even tried to kill him. I have so many disqualifications, yet the Lord is still so kind. He has come to see me at the last point of my life. He is worshipable by all great sages. Still, he's so merciful, he has come to see an abominable person like me. So at the time of death, we will all have some disqualifications. So what will be the qualification that Krishna will come to us at the time of death? So Bhishma, again, in that verse 23, he was always thinking of Krishna in his lifetime. And he also, he said we should chant Hare Krishna too. Even Bhishma recommends that at the time, that we should be chanting the holy name, we should be meditating, and we should have attentive devotion. And Krishna will come in our mind. Now, Bhishma was very special, so Krishna came right in front of him. Now, we cannot expect that to happen in our lives. But he will come in our mind. If he feels that we sincerely want to go to the spiritual world, if we sincerely want spiritual life, even if we have some disqualifications, even if we do sometimes fall down, even if we do have some doubts, Krishna will still come for us at the time of death. And there is one verse in Isha Upanishad that says, now I'm about to die, please remember all the things I've done for you. Now I'm here, I'm going to die, please remember what I have done. And so Krishna will remember. I won't go into it, but I did have a near-death experience, and everything was taken away. My memory, my identity, had no clue of who I was. And at that point, I couldn't remember. I didn't even know who Krishna was or who I was. But Krishna came in the form of the holy name. Although I didn't even have a mind. How he came, I don't know. But he manages. So if you do service for him, then he will certainly come, even if you may not remember him at the time of death. And so I had been teaching japa workshops, about 7 of them. And then when I had the near death, that was the form Krishna chose to come to me. In the form of the holy name. And so I saw the holy name. But so we must be very serious to perfect our lives too. And the examples are given in Bhagavatam. During life, Kunti was showing us how to live, and now at the time of death, Bhishma is showing us how to die, how we can prepare for death, how we can become equipoised even at death. And one more quote from Nectar of Devotion, compassionate. He has 64 qualities, of which one is compassion. And Sri Rupa Goswami says, Krishna's compassion was exhibited when he came to see Grandfather Bhishma lying on the bed of arrows. And actually, Nectar of Devotion, this is which chapter, I don't know, maybe 37, Bhishma was very anxious to see Krishna, and Krishna came, and when Krishna saw the pitiable condition of Krishna, Krishna was speaking with tears in his eyes. So Krishna was crying to see Bhishma like that, and speaking to him. We don't have Krishna's words recorded, but according to Nectar of Devotion, Krishna was speaking. Not only was he shedding tears, he forgot himself in his compassion. He was feeling so compassionate to Bhishma. So then, either Sri Rupa Goswami or Srila Prabhupada says, instead of offering obeisances to Krishna directly, devotees offer obeisances to his compassionate nature. Does anybody know who that is? Radharani, yes, Radharani. So devotees, taking advantage of his compassionate nature, Radharani, always pray to Radharani for Krishna's compassion. So this is the goal of our life, to somehow become attracted to Krishna, and then somehow attract Krishna by our service. If we take shelter of Radharani, she is attracting Krishna by her service. So we can also attract Krishna by our service. And even Bhishma Dev, you will hear next week how he does also glorify the gopis, even though he is not in that rasa of Madhurya. But he appreciates their great devotion, and he also begs for their mercy. So I will stop here. And are there any questions or comments? Yes.
I'm just having this 1930. It says, withdrew his mind from everything else and fixed his wide open eyes upon the original personality of God, Sri Krishna, who stood before him four-handed.
Yeah.
And so, and it says Chaturbhuja.
Chaturbhuja, yes.
So I'm just wondering that why he why Bhishma Dev saw Krishna in four-handed form.
Oh, that's a very good question. Why did Bhishma see Krishna in his four-handed form? So in Vrindavan, he is two-handed. And as Vasudev in Dwaraka and Mathura, you see him as two-handed, but actually he's also four-handed there. And that's how he appeared in Mathura at his birth to Vasudeva and Devaki. He's actually four-handed. And Devaki was in so much anxiety because she got a baby with four hands that she said, you know, Kamsa is definitely going to kill you. I can't hide you, you know. Just be normal, please, so I can hide you somewhere, you know. So he in Mathura and in Dwaraka, his natural position is to have four hands. He is worshipped in opulence, like Vaikuntha. It's a little more elevated than Vaikuntha, but it's still on that same mood of awe and reverence. They all know he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Yadus, his family, they all knew. But once he goes to Vrindavan, and the borderline is the Jamuna River, so he fell in. Vasudev dropped him at the border, and he came back up in the original form of Krishna, because he never leaves Vrindavan. So the original form is two hands, and he also shows like that in Dwaraka, but even sometimes he shows his four hands. And that was when Rukmini and he were having a discussion, and she fell on the ground and fainted. He needed four hands to pick her up and to wipe her forehead. So that's his original form in that particular place. And Bhishma was not in Vrindavan. He was in Hastinapur. And Hastinapur is an extension of Dwaraka in the spiritual world also. So therefore, Bhishma Dev worships the four-handed form of Krishna.
Bhishma's relationship to Krishna is more in terms of awe and
that's
reverence.
Right. Yeah, his relationship is chivalrous rasa. Chivalrous rasa, yes.
So what about Arjuna? Like, Arjuna asked Krishna to come in two-handed form.
Yes, when Arjuna was a little bit more intimate than Bhishma. He saw the four-handed, but he was in the Yadu dynasty. And so they're a bit more intimate with Krishna, and they prefer to see him in his two-handed form, as far as I know. And Arjuna also, Arjuna was a more intimate friend, the Pandavas, than Bhishma. The Pandavas were like part of the family. Krishna was part of their family. But Bhishma was more like an outsider in one sense. So he didn't have as close a relationship with Krishna as the Yadus and the Pandavas. Yes. Although he was not an outsider, he's Mahajan. But the relationship was a little bit more distant.
Bhishma Pitama is considered one of the 12 Mahajans.
Who?
Bhishma Pitama is considered
12. Bhishma.
Yeah. So, it was not clear from his whole life that how much devotion he had towards Krishna, but only at the time of death it became so much revealed that he could attract Krishna to him. So definitely he is a great personality, but can we know some incidences throughout his life like which shows that he was a great personality in terms of devotion to God?
Mahajan. If you read Navadvipa Mahatmya, you'll find out how he got all his knowledge. He went to Mayapur. I mean, the history of his life was he was born from Shantanu, from Ganga Devi. She drowned the first 7 babies in the Ganga. And then with Bhishma, then Shantanu forbade her to drown him. And so she said, okay, I'm leaving you. But then she took Bhishma with her and she took him away to get education, actually. And he got education in Vidyanagar in Navadvipa. And so that's where he learned all the great principles. And I don't exactly remember, I can't remember who taught him. One of the great sages taught him devotional service. One of the great sages taught him devotional service in Navadvipa. That's one thing I just remember. And of course, when it was, he was an advisor to Duryodhana, and he would always advise Duryodhana to Dhritarashtra. And he was always advising Dhritarashtra to make peace with the Pandavas. He and Drona and Vidura, they were always advising. In that sense, you could also see. Yeah?
So if he understands the principles of religion and he can apply them accordingly, why did he take side of Duryodhana? Which religious principle is he showing us by taking this
side? So he's showing us by taking the side of Duryodhana, he's showing the principle of the Kshatriya Dharma. The Kshatriyas, if you are, he's showing the obligation he had to the Kauravas, because he was actually the grandfather of them, and they were feeding him. I mean, there is a point somewhere that he was eating the food which was contaminated by them. So the principle is that if you serve somebody like that, Duryodhana, Dhritarashtra, then you also get the association, you get the karma of those people who you eat. Therefore, we're careful where we eat, whose house we eat at. Because you do share and you get their karma. You get their karma. So, the point, I always hear the point about food, because he ate their food. And it is the Kshatriya principle that whoever maintains you, you must reciprocate with them by helping them in times of distress. That was the Kshatriya.
So while reading at the verse, I realized that Bhishma was in a position in which he was fully realized that he is not the body. He's not the body which everyone was looking at, and he's the soul. But for many of us, we have this feeling that we are this body, and
we do have that feeling.
That feeling of life comes from. And that feeling of life comes from breathing, and there are so many symptoms of prana.
Right.
So, I mean, how that feeling, how's that detached feeling there when you don't really associate with the life air, and you feel yourself as a spirit soul and not as the body?
Okay, how is the feeling when you're feeling you're not this body? Okay. Well, it may not come all at once like that. But it may come, I mean, even you can experience it as a student, that sometimes you may forget to eat. You may forget to eat your food because you're so engrossed, so absorbed in your studies. So then, you know, but we know we have to eat because that's, you know, very important to maintain the body. But it's according to your absorption and where your mind is, then you can even understand you're not the body even while you're doing material things. You get so absorbed you forget to eat or you don't sleep. If you ever go under anesthesia or any of these things, or sometimes, you can understand also at night that, you don't have consciousness of your body, but you're in a completely different world. So how is that possible? It's you dream. And the same thing happens, Prabhupada says, at the time of death, that you just forget your body. So there is some separation there. That one thing you can understand. And then there's three levels of consciousness. There's awakeness, there's dreaming, and there's deep sleep. So in deep sleep, you don't think of anything and you don't dream. But because when you wake up, you know, you think, okay, I had my deep sleep. So you know you were in that consciousness, in that place. So that deep sleep is a place where you're not conscious. You realize you're separate from your body and even your mind. And that was what I experienced under anesthesia, that I was conscious but without the subtle and the gross bodies. Conscious without both. And you realize, and I was looking, I said, I don't have a gross body. Maybe I left my body, you know. But I didn't. But, I mean, for a time being, I did, in one sense. So you leave your body every night when you sleep, actually. You become separate from your body. That's one way to understand how you're different. Thank you.